and welcome to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from the League of Women Voters of Delaware, we have its advocacy chair, Sandy Spence. Sandra Spence, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I think this is a busy time of the year for you, isn't it?
It is, but it's not the busiest since I do advocacy, and the legislature's only in session from January till June, so I have a little bit of a break, but we're catching up on everything and getting ready for next year.
So let's get started with, just in a nutshell, what is the League of Women Voters?
The League is a nonpartisan political organization, and we encourage informed and active participation in citizens in government.
Well, that's real easy. And when were you founded?
In 1920.
1920.
And we're going to have our 100th anniversary in a couple years.
That is the same year, was it not, of the 19th Amendment, obviously.
That is correct.
So let's get the history behind it.
Our members grew right out of the suffragette movement. In fact, if people want to know more about that, there's a wonderful movie called Iron-Jawed Angels that came out in 2003 with Hilary Swank as the star, and it gives a really great analysis of the early suffragette movement.
Well, the suffragettes worked for decades to finally get the 19th Amendment.
That's right.
And so now you have all of these suddenly enfranchised voters who are still, though, subordinates.
That's right. And so it was really challenging to the leaders to make things work. In fact, first of all, they had to deal with the fact that there were some people who thought that the whole foundations of society were going to be shaken by this movement of all these women out there voting. However, we learned that it was going to take a while for women to, first of all, learn the issues and recognize their importance in voting and participating in government. So it was very challenging in the early days. And it remains challenging. I think to this day, we're still having a lot of issues, as you hear on the radio every day.
That is true. So you're founded to educate women in what?
Well, first of all, the importance of voting, the importance of participating in our government structure, learning to understand what the government structure is, getting a civics education, for example. So the first thing they worked on, well, in fact, I just wanted to quote you something from a book that I have called In the Public Interest, which was a history of the first 50 years of the League of Women Voters. And the author talked about, and I quote, the complexity of the psycho-cultural process to make political participation a meaningful engagement for so severely subordinated a class. And I think we're still dealing with that to this day. In fact, it seems as if every generation has to be educated to the issues. And fortunately, recently, we've had a lot more education of women, and especially millennials, about the issues of the day. And they're starting to participate more than they ever did.
Now you are, of course, looking to enfranchise anyone who can vote to get out there and vote. But you said something that was kind of interesting, that when you started this, that part of it was to teach how the government works and teach civics. Are you having to do this all over again and again, especially in the day of social media where the most ridiculous things get passed around and everybody says, spread the word? And you're going, no, I don't think that's true from my civics class back in high school.
That's true. In fact, the State League is in the process of developing a 5-session civics class that will be available on film, and we'll be doing presentations of various places around the state to educate people. And these are basically lectures by very engaging experts on the subjects of the Constitution of the United States, the Delaware Constitution, and various civics issues. And so that's one of the things that we're doing now, because a lot of schools don't even teach civics anymore, and it's very frustrating to us. A lot of people just have no idea what our government structure is. In fact, a woman I know who's very well informed and very well educated just came to me the other day, and she was all worked up about this editorial in the New York Times and saying, oh, the government's going to have a crisis, and what are we going to do? And the 25th Amendment is going to happen. And I had to look up the 25th Amendment to see exactly what it said, and it's not quite as scary as it sounds. It's a pretty complex process. So anyway, we have a lot to learn, and we still do, and all of us do, but we're working on it.
Who can vote? That's the scary thing. We all can vote. So
yeah.
But who can actually vote?
Just about everybody. There are some limits. I'll tell you, in most states, felons are not allowed to vote. In Delaware, the league worked with others to get our legislation amended so that now felons can vote, except for those who are in prison for murder or manslaughter, bribery or improper influence or abuse of office, or a sexual offense. And so they can vote as soon as they've completed their sentence, which includes through probation, et cetera. And there's no problem. And a lot of them don't know that. So we're trying to educate them about that as well.
But if someone is in jail, can they vote if they're in jail for?
Actually, yes, because the last statistics I have are that 33% of the men in our prisons and 40% of the women are there on pretrial detention, which means they haven't even been found guilty. So unless they had a previous felony that excludes them, they can vote. And they'll have to do it by absentee, obviously, if they're in prison.
That was just Delaware. Was that correct?
Yes, there? That's correct.
And so now let's go on to the homeless. Or the people who are couch surfers who do not have a fixed address of their own.
Okay, well, they can vote as well as long as they provide an address. And that can be a shelter or some agency of the government. And as long as they provide that, they're allowed to vote.
So as long as that organization is willing to allow me to use this as my mailing address, I can still register to vote. What kind of documentation do they need to register?
They just need some official type of document, a letter or an envelope that has their address on it and has the agency address on it that shows that they do have an address.
Do we need a photo ID?
Delaware does not require a photo ID. Now, when you register, sometimes you do need to show, like, a driver's license, but it's not required once you're in the system, once you're registered.
And now we talked about absentee ballots. How does somebody vote by absentee? How does that process work?
Okay, first of all, you have to get an application. Under most circumstances, I'll get to the exception. You ask for the application. You can get it online, or you can get it from your county board of elections or the state board of elections. It does not require notary. It used to until this year when we worked with the others to get that requirement eliminated, so you don't have to pay a poll tax.
Yeah, that is a poll tax.
Yeah, if you have to pay for the notary. Anyway, first of all, you have to be registered, obviously, by October 13th. And then the application needs to be mailed to you by November 2nd. That's by the Board of Elections. So that gives you a few days to get it back to them. It has to be received by the County Board of Elections by Election Day, or you can go vote directly at the County Board of Elections where you live up until noon on the day before the election. And that way you don't even have to bother with getting the application and getting it back in the mail and all that. You can just go there and vote absentee.
Let's get into the actual voting process. Do we need anything when we present ourselves to our polling place?
Yes. If you're registered to vote, you are not required to provide a photo ID, unlike many states. And this is something that is a very important issue for the League of Women Voters of the United States. And many states are fighting the photo ID issue, but we don't have to worry about that. You do not need it. You do need a document that shows your name and address and from a place that shows that you really live there. For example, a utility bill or something like that. So you do, and also about sometime in the summertime, in fact, around August, everybody who's registered at that point should have received a card from the State Board of Elections showing their polling place and the fact that they're registered and what party they belong to and all that kind of thing. So they could show that as well.
Okay.
Now, let me tell you something about school board elections. They're a little bit different. School board elections do not require that you be registered. They allow anybody, any citizen who lives in the school district to vote. So all you need there is something that shows that you live in that school district. So it has to have your name and the address of a utility or something that serves your home to vote in that school board election.
Okay. Hey, if you're just joining us, I'm Laura Lewis, and this is Our Delaware Valley. Sandra Spence is our guest today. She's the advocacy chair for the League of Women Voters of Delaware. And you can find more information about everything we talk about today at LWV.com. LWVDelaware.org. That's LWVDelaware.org. If you're not in the state of Delaware, you can find your local chapter, the League of Women Voters, by just going to LWV.org. And here's another really important web address, and it's Vote411. Vote411.org. And that is a voter's guide that we are going to get into in just a moment. But let's finish up our conversation about the actual voting here. How safe is voting in Delaware? When we go to our polling place, will our votes count?
Yes. This is a real important issue, as you know, because of all the hacking that is alleged, at least. And we feel that our election system is very secure. First of all, our election system is not connected directly to the internet. There's very strong firewalls and everything else that connect or that protect our internal systems. However, there is an issue with the equipment, which is 22 years old, and there was a task force that was established to determine what new voting equipment we should get. Only five states in the country use equipment that's that old. And one of the requirements that they were making sure to require was that there be some form of paper ballot that would result from your voting and that could be used in audits that they expect to produce on some form of a regular basis as a sample, at least. And so we're going to hear in the news very soon exactly what we should expect to get. That equipment will have to be manufactured, and then they have to send it to the system, the Board of Elections. There has to be training, et cetera, et cetera. So that will hopefully be available by 2020, by the big next election, presidential election.
And so we don't have to worry about that in the state of Delaware, about our votes not counting or being counted.
Well, there's always a few people that are paranoid, but I don't believe that they need to worry.
What is the e-signature part of the voting here?
Oh, yes. In fact, this is pretty interesting. It's very frustrating to me that several states have gotten a lot of good PR because they've gone to what's called universal voting. And that means that everybody can vote automatically. Well, in Delaware, the latest number we have, which is very recent from the Pew Foundation, is that 87% of eligible voters in Delaware are in fact registered. And part of that is because of the system that was set up by our current election commissioner, Elaine Manlove, with Jennifer Cohen, who was at the time the head of the DMV, the Division of Motor Vehicles, and she's now the head of transportation. But in any case, those two women worked together to come up with a system where you could send an e-signature from the DMV directly to the Board of Elections so that when you go to register your car, especially if you're a new voter, you're newly moved into the state, as many, many people are doing, then you could be automatically registered. And that system is also being extended to various social service agencies within the state, the Department of Labor and Social Services and things like that. But that's still in the process, and it exists in some cases, but not everywhere. But anyway, recently Delaware was evaluated by the Pew Foundation, and they found that we rated third nationally in our election performance index. And part of that was because of the high percentage of voter registration we have, which was 86.99%. And that compares to the national average of 84.18%.
And we voted more often, too, didn't I? Not more often, I'm sorry. More of us voted.
Yes. So our turnout was 64.61% compared to a national average of 61.64%.
But what was that election? May I ask, does it say which one it was?
Oh, I think that was the most recent one. This evaluation is performed every election year. So this is from 2016.
And so that is the federal and the presidential election in there.
Right.
It's in between time that nobody goes out and votes. That's the big problem.
That's true. But this year, there were on both parties, there were major primaries. And so it aroused a lot of attention. And we had 25% turnout by the Democrats and 20% by Republicans, which is the highest in many years for both of those parties. It doesn't sound good, but it's a lot better than it's been in the past.
And you know what? 100% of them have an opinion.
That's right.
They didn't come out and do anything about it. So you've got 13% that are not registered. And again, we're talking about the people who are allowed to register to vote. How do you catch those 13% to get universal registration?
Right. the league is very active in that, along with a lot of new organizations are getting involved as well. But we have a major effort going now to get to schools, to minority communities and so on, to get everybody registered that we can possibly get. And then we're going to be following up to get out the vote, GOTV, get out the vote.
Now, to get someone to the polls is one thing. To have them make an informed choice, you have the Vote 411.
That's right.
And so I know that the league has put out voters' guides for decades and since the beginning. You want to talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, we used to do it in print, and these days it's just too expensive. And now, for the last about 4 to 6 years, we've done Vote 411. This year, we've had the most fantastic person working on it or coordinating the whole thing is Kim Wells, and she's done an incredible job. And it's the first time that we actually covered the primary, which is really important. In several cases, especially in Newcastle County, the election in the primary is virtually the election because they don't have anybody running in the other party. So this was really important, and she got 80% of the candidates to submit their information. What Vote 11 provides is you can go in there, just go to vote411.org. You can put in your street address. You can get any kind of information about it. You can check to see if you're registered and all that. You can also then get to all of the candidates that will be on your ballot. So in the primary, you would have to indicate whether you were a Democrat or a Republican, and then you could go into that primary and find out who the candidates were. Then the system sends out emails to every candidate and asks them. Each candidate has their own page on Vote 411, and they get to respond and put in their biographical information, a photo if they want to. And then they answer about 6 questions that the league develops on major issues that we see coming up. And these are divided. So there's specific ones for our national senator and representative, and separate issues for state legislators, and other issues for like the auditor and the attorney general, and then local issues, county councils and so on. So then that legislator gets to put in his or her own words what their responses are on all those questions. So then you can put a little X mark on that particular person that you prefer and print out a ballot to take with you to the voting booth so that you know what you did in case you forgot names and so on. It would be like a sample ballot with your check marks already made on it.
Already made on it. And mm-hmm. And that is available to any Delawarean who
That's right.
is going to be voting. And again,
That's right.
registration ends for the general election on October 13th.
That's right.
And so there's 13% of the population that has not yet registered.
Well, that's as of 16.
Mm-hmm.
So I suspect that there's fewer than that now because we've been working so hard. And because of issues going on in our country, more and more people are registering.
More and more people, though, are becoming voters when they hit that magic age.
Well, as a matter of fact, in Delaware, when kids are eligible to drive, and they're 16, if they go in and get a learner's permit, they can register then. They simply can't vote until they're 18. So we even catch young people early in many cases.
Wow. So now let's turn it towards the advocacy work that the League of Women Voters are doing. And you are the chair of the advocacy committee. So you want to talk a little bit about some of the reforms and some of the programs that you are working towards now?
Right. First of all, I'd like to go back to a little bit of the history and say that early on, it was decided that the league had 2 primary purposes, and one was education and one was advocacy. So in order to make sure that our members are educated about any given issue, say there's an emerging issue. For example, we have a bill in the legislature on assisted suicide, but a right to die. And so if 2 doctors say that somebody's going to die or is likely to die within 6 months, they can, if 2 doctors agree on that, then the person is allowed to get a doctor to prescribe medications that will help them do that. They have to be cognizant of what they're doing, and they have to be able to self-administer the drugs, so it isn't a doctor giving them drugs. Anyway, mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of protections. But we don't have a position on that. So what we need to do first to get a, to be able to advocate on it is that we need to develop a position. So to do a position, you have to have a study that's done and that shows the pros and cons of the issue. And then you need to go to the locals and get them to understand what the issue is. And then we have what we call a consensus meeting, and they come together and they talk about the various questions that are involved. And then there's a vote. And it doesn't have to be, it's not a majority, it's not unanimous. It's just, it seems like everybody's pretty much agreed to this. And then that gives us a position that we can lobby on. So I brought with me, and your audience can't see it, but we have a book that's about at least a quarter to a half an inch thick that's published and available on Amazon.com called Impact on Issues. And the latest issue is dated 2016-18. And this is a guide to our public policy position. So, and then we have a similar little booklet that we have that's the position. State positions where, you know, we've adopted positions that are more specific than maybe in the national one. So first of all, we have to have a position on a subject, and then we can lobby on it. Now, the fact is, this book is so thick that we have a lot of positions on a lot of issues. I mean, we cover things from, well, voting and elections are primary. They're a DNA issue for the league. But we also address education, environment, housing, health care, criminal justice, land use and transportation,
all of the things,
all kinds of social issues. So it's very broad. We have 10 registered lobbyists, all volunteers for the league, and each one covers a specific topic and specializes in that. We write position papers, we write testimonies, we present testimony, we hang out at the legislature in the lobby or wherever, and we try to get legislators to adopt our position on various bills.
What are some of the legislative issues that you're working on?
Well, we have a spreadsheet that we came out with, and it has like over 200 bills that we looked at and decided whether we want to support mostly, or a few of them we oppose, and some of them we just monitor because we're interested, but they're not urgent to us. Anyway, so for example, in the most recent legislative session, we supported a bill to regulate massage parlors because a lot of human sex trafficking happens with the victims end up in massage parlors, and that way they'll be able to regulate those. We worked really hard on a bill that, in fact, more than one, but the first one got through, was to reduce the use of money bail because, you know, somebody that's a drug trafficker, or big deal drug type, can get the money to pay off the bail, but somebody that's a smaller one that didn't have enough money can't, ends up in jail. We have a woman who's just been working on farmland preservation for years, and we finally got the $10 million for that, even in the governor's budget. And then we got, in terms of guns, we got rid of bump stocks. They're banned. We got through two bills that deal with people who were mentally ill, but it has plenty of protections for them to give them adequate protection. We got rid of shackling kids when they go into court, which is just unbelievable. We made it easier to get expungement for kids. There was a bill, for some reason, we didn't have special funding for special ed from kindergarten through third grade. Apparently, it was hard to diagnose or when the legislation was first started, and so we didn't start until fourth grade. But now, although the bill itself didn't pass, there was money that was appropriated to help with that problem. We got rid of some disparities in out-of-school suspensions of kids for violations of whatever. There was a terrible situation where our primary care doctors were getting paid by insurance companies at as little as 80 to 85% of the Medicare rate. And so there was a bill that was passed that requires insurers to cover primary care doctors, and which we really have a shortage of. So that took care of that one. There was a civil citation program. I noticed that we're in Deborah Heffernan's district here, and she was the main sponsor of a program that was started on a two-year basis, and it's now been made permanent, so the kids don't have to necessarily get into the criminal justice system, but the police can give them other things they have to do if they have minor violations. That's just a sample. Several years ago, we worked very hard to eliminate the death penalty, and there was a bill to reinstate it this year, but it didn't get anywhere. So we've just done a lot of things like that. Oh, the ERA we're working on hard. Our priority for next year is a bill that didn't get through this year, and that is early voting. This bill would eliminate all those problems you have with the absentee, because one thing we didn't mention earlier is absentee ballots. Under the Constitution, you have to have an excuse, such as you have to be on vacation, you have to be sick, etc. And so some people actually have to lie because they need an absentee and they don't have an excuse. But anyway, this would require that people can vote for 10 days leading up to the election, including Saturday and Sunday. And there'd have to be at least one location in every county, plus the city of Wilmington, where people could go and vote early. We think that's the most important voting correction we need, because we have a pretty good system in Delaware. So those are some of the things. And another really hot issue, especially in Sussex County, but it's also a problem up north, and that is clean drinking water. And so we've actually been working with New Jersey and Pennsylvania leagues, and New York somewhat too, on fracking, because the chemicals come down the river, and the Delaware River is a source of drinking water for a lot of people up north.
You have a consensus, you work within your roles, and you come up with your position, and then you have at her.
Right. Well, we usually have the position, and then within that position, we write specifics about why we need this because of that or whatever.
Do you have local chapters as well?
Yes. Each county in Delaware has a league that covers the entire county, so the entire state is covered by the League of Women Voters. And some of the things that those locals are working on at the local level is, in Sussex, for example, they have an observer corps, which I'm very proud of. They observe the county council and the Planning and Zoning Commission at most of their meetings, and then they write reports, just brief, simple reports, and then at the end of the year, they collect them all and write a sunshine report that they try to produce during Sunshine Week in the summer. That gives the county council or boarding of planning and zoning advice on what the league thinks they could do to improve their operations. And we also credit them for good things that they're doing. Sussex also, in the last 2 years, they've been preparing for the next issue of the county comprehensive plan. So they've had over 18 public forums on all kinds of issues relating to land use and so on that need to be in their comprehensive plan. Kent County has been working with the students at Dell State, and they have this league club, which is terrific. And those girls are so energized. It's exciting to see them and meet them and hear how articulate they are. And then the other thing that they've been focusing on in Kent is the homelessness, which is a big issue in that area. And there's actually a league member who started the Interfaith Shelter, which is, I think, the largest homeless shelter in Kent County. Newcastle County representatives do what serve the state project. They go to every naturalization ceremony that happens, and they welcome new citizens, and they take a packet of information about voting and everything that new citizens need to understand. They're also working with the women's prison, which is located in Newcastle County. There's only one in the state. And they do an annual dinner gala kind of thing that honors Carrie Chapman Katz, who was the founder of the League of Women Voters. And they honor various women who are outstanding. They also were the primary leaders in a project for the state to develop our own climate change policy and position several years ago. And they did such great work that they went to the national convention and got the national organization to adopt a climate change position. And so we're just really proud of all the things that the locals are doing and throughout the state.
So who is the League of Women Voters? Who can be a member?
Oh, anybody. As a matter of fact, thank you. The League of Women Voters is not for women only. During the 70s, during the feminist revolution, we decided that really there are a lot of men who support our principles and support us. In fact, I think in my county, Sussex, that about 30% of our members are men. So we do allow men and women, and they just lowered the age, the national level, I think, to 16. And we also have younger kids that can be associates or something. As I think I might have mentioned, one of the things that they're doing in Kent County is that league has been working with Dell State, and students there decided they wanted to have a League of Women Voters club specifically for the university. And so that's going going great. And those kids are really out there registering and getting people to the polls.
And again, it's non-political, so you have both parties and independents, right, et cetera, represented in your roles.
Right.
So if someone is interested, what do they do?
They join at the local level. So they really need to go to the local league, and you can usually find you can do it online in most cases. There's a little form, and it's about $50 in most cases.
And of course, if we go to lwv.org, we can find our local chapter that way.
Right, exactly.
For more information about everything that we talked about today, go to lwv.org in Delaware, lwvdelaware.org. And if you would like to get that voter's guide, go to vote411.org, and you'll be able to download that. Now, here's where I say thank you to Sandra Spence. She is the advocacy chair for the League of Women Voters of Delaware. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Good luck on Election Day and throughout the year. I'm Laura Lewis. Stay tuned for more of Our Delaware Valley.